The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Toy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Gone. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I am here virtually distance of course, in the MFC studios for this week's show. On this week's show, we're going to have L-Man Jenny Feldy interviews filmmaker Deborah Markowitz, and also from the MCON, I am going to have part one of the panel that I did with Abby Kadabi, puppeteer and actress and comedian and all-around awesome person, Leslie Carrara Rudolph. So, but before we do any of that, we're going to take it away with the news.
It's morphin' time!
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. So the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, of which we are the official radio show of, celebrating with 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comicness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way in November the 21st of this year. Tickets are not on sale now. Also want to give our shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Muse Day, Famous Treasure Media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasmin Ray, The Hurricane, and Lily Portes. Want to have your own little shout-out? Go to our website, www.itcamefromreal.com. There's a little button on there that takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 and Issue 2 are on sale right now. Alright, I also want to mention that on Wednesday, June the 10th at the East Middle Public Library, we're going to have our 105th live show. We're going to have actress and performer and author Sarah Kaufman, and they'll be giving away an autographed copy of their book, plus we'll be giving away two tickets to the Long Island Trek Convention. With that, we're going to start off with the sad news, as we always tend to do. Voice actor Thomas Kane Roberts, known professionally as just Tom Kane, died recently from complications of a stroke that he received many years prior. While not the original voice, Tom voiced such characters as Yoda, Admiral Ackbar, Boba Fett, Qui-Gon Jinn, and C-3PO in various animations and video games of the Star Wars franchises. In addition to that, Tom also voiced Darwin Thornberry in the Wild Thornberrys animated series, Professor Utonium in the Powerpuff Girls, that was the dad, and narrator Smurf in the various Smurf movies. He was 64. So that is it for the sad news. We're going to move on for the not as sad news from the...
That's a lot of nuts!
Department. The new Michael Jackson biopic has retaken the number one spot in the domestic box office, pulling in an additional $26.1 million in ticket sales in its fourth week of release, beating out the new Devil Wears Prada sequel, which came at the number two spot, making an additional $17.8 million in its third week of release. For those of you keeping track, the Super Mario sequel is still the highest grossing film of this year, with $424.5 million, followed by Project Hail Mary with $340 million. Now, I have yet to see any of these movies. I am planning on seeing Super Mario sequel and Project Hail Mary. And, of course, I've mentioned how I have a dubious relationship with biopics because I feel that they are not actually a representation of what really happened. And it's really a fake movie. Well, a real movie about a real situation, but it's a fake representation of that. I've mentioned this before. The best idea of that would be the Weird Al Yankovic biopic, which was written by Weird Al Yankovic. And if you watch that, it will give you a new insight on the entire world of biopics, especially for the fact that a lot of it just did not happen. But the way that he took it and made it his own is something that should get more attention to it. Also, I want to mention that it's rare when a movie was number one, goes down, and then comes back up. So that goes to the word of mouth. So with that, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com.
Calling all comic fans, Hurricane, Long Island's only benefit comic art convention, returns in 2026. Join us May 9th and December 12th at Bethany Congregational Church, East Rockaway, New York. Grab toys and collectibles, dig through comic books, meet artists and writers, enter amazing raffles, enjoy food, fellowship, and rock your cosplay. Just a $5 donation gets you in from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit Hurricane on Facebook, and on Instagram, it's Hurricane LI for details. Hurricane, where heroes unite for good.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. As I mentioned earlier in the show, we're going to be having part one of our MCon panel that was recorded live at the MCon with voice actress and Abby Cadabby from Sesame Street's puppeteer performer, Leslie Godruff. So here's part one. Enjoy.
I am the special guest you're going to be talking to us and about, which makes my life easy because she's right here.
Oh, what?
Puppeteer.
Oh.
Voice actress. Everybody, please welcome Leslie Carrera Roth.
How do you do? Carrera.
Carrera?
Carrera, like the marble. It's Italian. My dad's Italian. So, there you go.
So I guess the first question is, how did you decide to get into puppetry? Was that your first love? Did you watch Lamb Chop and Cheerleaders growing up, or did you see other things and you got into that somehow?
Well, I love the Muppets. You know, and I love actually Wayland Flowers. People said if Lamb Chop and Madam had a baby, it would be Lolly, my character. I actually just kind of fell into puppetry. My dad wanted, his dream was to be an animator for Disney. And so when he went back to school, which is pretty amazing with four kids and everything, and decided to be an art teacher. And he had art all over the place. And I tease and say I have ADHD, TNT, explosive attention deficit disorder. But I don't. I actually have a different thing with my brain called perception processing disorder, which means I struggle with words, but I see things in pictures. And if I can visualize it, I can understand it. And then when I was little, I got into Sesame Street because, you know, the Sesame Street was like everything around me could talk, could be a story. And I was like, oh, that's what it looks like inside my brain. So I really wanted to live on Sesame Street. I didn't think they were puppets. I thought they were real. I thought Grover was my friend. So I never thought, what's under that? I just have loved characters, and
I would like cartoon a character, you know, like, and the next thing I know, I'd like dress up like that character.
All kinds of stuff, old ladies, you know, things like that.
And villains. Oh, I was just doing Yzma.
So I would just like step into a character, I'd dress up like a character, I'd draw a character, and sometimes a character would come on the end of my arm. So puppets kind of like found me, and my very first job was on Muppets Tonight 30 years ago, It's the 30 years since Muppets Tonight, and I had an HBO workspace show, which is kind of like for comedians, they give a space, and they were the Muppets were looking for female comedians who could sing and perform in character, and I went to an audition, and I got the job. But I didn't know what I was doing because all my puppets were made out of socks and things I found around the house. We didn't have a lot of money, Muppet money. So I had to learn on the job. And then once I realized that I could be a pineapple 1 second and the letter O another second, I'm like, I'm in. Sorry, that was really loud. So then I just kind of fell in love with puppetry. So I do all kinds of things. I'm also a writer. I have a degree in child development through the arts at San Francisco State. So I work a lot with kids at risk and neurodiverse. And my company, Humor with the Heart, I founded with my friend, works with, you know, childhood trauma, anything that you've been through that seems like it's hard to get through. We come in and swoop in. And we help you navigate life creatively, either through puppetry, music, writing, drawing, or anything else.
So it's a great creative outlet for the kids.
Yeah, it's just, when did you get, I just have always been like this. I've always been like this. I can't really explain it. Like, there's always been a character on my arm, in my heart, in my mind, on the page. So
first of all, I want to throw back to just the facade. I mean, Jim Henson's Kermit was originally just a sock.
Yeah, it was his mom's coat.
Right.
He cut up his mom's coat. She was annoyed, I bet.
So when you went to Sesame Street and you see, I guess, because you said you thought that they were real, and honestly, I do think that they are real.
Oh, yeah.
You can infuse your imagination into the character and it becomes a character. I mean, how many times have you done puppetry and people speak to your hand as opposed to you?
All the time. So Sesame Street, like Abby, it's interesting. I brought Lolly with me. I've had Lolly for 26 years. Lolly is incredibly flawed. She's just like, I was born in an underwear drawer. You know, she's like, she's grouchy. She's very jealous of Abby. But when I have Abby on, like, the way kids play with Lolly is so different from when they play with Abby because she's got her wings. They love each other. They are just healthy siblings. When I have Tango on, and I'll just have this dog on my arm and like put people up after the paw and hug, rub my belly. The first lady, you know, Michelle Obama, rub my belly. You know what I mean? So, I think people just, there's something where there's this pilot light of joy inside of you, and people just want to play. I think puppets and fairies and, you know, cosplay, you get it, right? We want to play. We want to play with that character that we love and identify with it, and puppets are a permission slip to play.
So when you're creating a character and you're voicing a character, do you imagine them being a separate entity or are they still part of you?
That is such a great question. I do think I have a separation, but it's a part of me. Like, there's things that I don't have the courage to say, but Lolly does. And there's things that are said better, like, I have this character, Granny Dot, where she's 98 years old and I can say whatever the heck I want. I'm 98! I've been through everything, you know? And she's, my mom's 97. And she's 97! My mom's amazing! Give it up for my mom! She's the queen of kindness. But she's been through, you know, she's born in 1929, so she's been through the war, she's been through the depression, she's been through all these things, and I know all of her stories, but Leslie, I can't. I am not convincing telling those historical things that my mom has told me, but Granny Dot is. So I can separate myself. Lolly, if there's something that I have a hard time, like each of my puppets has a mission statement, right? So I have a character named Polar Doodle. It's part polar bear, part doodle. I'm poodle. I'm the cutest thing ever, and it's my job to be cute. And that puppet, it was just a folk madness puppet that I put poofs on it. But that's one of my most popular puppets. So when I go into, I'm with the J Fund Foundation, so I work a lot with kids with pediatric cancer, and I go into hospitals. Sometimes when you're not feeling good, and you're hurting, and you're angry, and you're sad, you just want to hug something cute, right? And that's my job as polar dude. I'm just cute. And that's his only mission. So I feel like each one of my puppets has a special part of my heart, but I separate it. They each have a different mission. Does that make sense?
It does. It does, really.
Yeah. Yeah. No. A lot of them, like I said, they're more courageous than I am.
I find that a lot of performers use whatever they have as like a mask. That they are usually introverted, that they're very shy, but because they have that mask on, they can project, and through puppetry, you can project all your characters.
Yeah.
Each one has a different talent and different purpose and different, I guess, theme.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm a entertainer, comedian, right? But I think a lot of it is I am an introvert, but I present as an extrovert. Does that make sense? Somebody said that perfectly. Like, if I'm going to tell a story, I get so excited to tell a story. Like, my shows are like Mary Poppins meets Monty Python. It's a series of stories. But then when I get up there, I get really shy. And I say, like, it's not about me, it's through me.
Right.
So it's not, I don't make things about me. I make things about the audience. Like, what do I want to share? So, yes, I think you're very right. I can.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I'm happy just to be at home rubbing my dog's belly or being in the woods making fairy homes.
So, when you're performing, I know with Sesame Street and the Muppets, it's always above your head, right?
Yeah.
It's above.
Yeah.
Is that like a school you have to learn to do that?
Yeah.
Because with here, I would find it easier to do it in front. But if it's above your head and you're watching the monitor, right?
Like, yes, how do you did your homework. It's really hard because it's backwards too. So we have the puppet above our head. There's a monitor down below, and left is right, and right is left. It's very confusing, and it really focuses you in the moment. Jim Henson wanted everybody to see exactly what the audience would see. So it is a little bit like rubbing your belly and your head at
right.
the same time, chewing gum, doing hula hoop. And on top of everything, a lot of times you might have an assistant helping you with your arms. You might be next to like four or five people. So there's a pile of humans on the ground and people running around. And you have to concentrate all that stuff. So it's exciting, fun, and painful.
is there a craft to put you in that mindset that I'm performing now as opposed to just talking?
Because
you do a lot of improv when you're just making up stuff when you're talking to people. But when you're on the script and you're on the screen and you're doing all this stuff, is it a different mindset? Or
it is a different mindset. I think we're just hyper-focused. For my brain, it was perfect because I'm a visual thinker. A lot of times, I'll leave Abby up, like what I'm seeing down below, and I'll play with the camera people and everything just to stay in character. So by the time of counting backwards, 1, 3, 2, 1, you're already in that space, and we're always blocking each other. And Sesame Street, which is when we film on the set, it's a 3-camera shoot. And does anybody want me to explain what a 3-camera shoot is?
I would like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this was actually back in the day, Lucille Ball, a very funny, brilliant woman. Can we remember that women are funny too?
Right.
Okay? Women are hilarious. Ask Lily Tomlin and Carol Burnett and Bill Ratner and all these. Okay. So Desi Arnaz was married to Lucille Ball, and they had the Lucy Show. And they were in front of a live audience, right? And they had 3 cameras. And so on Sesame Street, we have 1 camera that's a gym camera. And it's like a camera on the end of the arm. So whenever we're moving, the gym is going with us, right? And we're on these little rollies. It's ridiculous. And we're walking. And if I tango, I'm like, and I'm trying to wave my tail at the same time. And then you have another camera, two other cameras. And one camera will be dedicated to a close-up. One camera will be dedicated to, let's say, three of the characters in the scene. And one camera will be dedicated to the whole scene. And on Sesame Street, you have the script, and we're reading the lines. And then, as if it wasn't hard enough to look at the monitor, they have live switching of the camera. So you'll be talking on a wide shot, you'll see all the characters, and then the camera will go to a single of Alan at Hooper's, and we're like, oh my gosh, and then there'll be a two shot that's next, and then the wide shot. So you have to memorize, they'll do a camera rehearsal. And when we shoot an episode a day on Sesame Street, it's crazy. So you kind of, you have to know your script, you have to know what the shots are, and then you just have to pray that they take your good ones. A lot of times, like if we're singing, but if one of our puppets messes up, and they'll go, that's the take we're doing. And they're like, no! So it's all these different things happening at once. It is crazy. But don't ask me to take a multiple choice test, because I won't fail.
When you are making a character, what goes into the process of creating a character and creating that voice and finding that voice for that person?
Okay. So there's different types of characters. I'll just use an example. This is going to be dark, but in a good way. My dog, Newhart, passed away, and I missed him so much, and I was really, really struggling with filling that void, and I thought, people kept on saying, are you going to do a character based on your dog? And I was like, I don't know, you know? But I wanted to do a dog character.
I wanted him to talk. I came up with Dr. Stog, Dr. Pavlov's dog that teaches everybody ESP, eat, sleep, and play.
And I wanted to do a love letter to what all dogs are like, right? So then I thought, is this a puppet? And then I was like, no, I want this character to interact with the audience. And so a little bit more. So I put on a lab coat, a dog nose, I put my hair in tails, and I ran around and I just hugged everybody. You know, so I did all these different things. So sometimes I'm thinking the character I'm creating is going to be an actual person.
I have a character, Madame Velvita. She is from Miss Sandwich Islands between Salami and Bologna, and she wears a tutu on her head. So, but if I'm going to do a puppet, I want to think about what the puppet needs to do.
Right.
Is it going to be a hand puppet? Is it just going to be, a shadow puppet? Is it going to be a puppet that needs flying hands because it has to pick things up? Or is it going to be a puppet like Lolly who has rods? So the design does matter, right? And then if you're in a scene with someone, and Abby is way up here, Elmo's even higher, and a lot of times Abby will be a little scratchy. Like she's been screaming at her brother's soccer game all day. And I'll do things with my voice to make sure that the audience,
if there's a scene,
if all of a sudden, I don't know if you know Velvet the Curtain from Elmo the Musical,
a lot of times I'll look at a scene and I'll pick a voice because I'm thinking of the audience, what they want to hear.
And if I'm a giant drink that comes into the theater, I make the voice like that.
Does that make sense? So it depends on if it's a puppet, if it's a person, if it's an animation, or all those things. So those, it's really a complex question.
And
I hope I answered it.
Oh, you've been doing a great job so far. So when you go on stage, you said you went to the Olympics, so you go meet celebrities, you go meet other people, and you're there, but you have the puppet, like there. How do you able to convey that this is the puppet and I'm not here?
They ignore us. They
really?
They totally ignore us. A lot of times, you know, sometimes celebrity is shy. I mean, if I'm Tango, I just go up and bark and they just pet the dog, like, and they put some at ease. Sometimes they'll introduce us. I I just play with them, and they, like, within a minute, they're done with us. They could care less. And you have to know that the celebrities up here, so stand up and just pretend I'm on the ground, right? So when the celebrity's here, and this is what they're seeing.
So I'm looking to the hand over
yeah.
here.
Yeah, so I'm looking down in the monitor. I have a hat. This is what I look like all the time. I baseball hat. I live in it. When I can't have a hat, I don't know what to do. So they don't really pay attention to us.
Right, I just talk to you like this.
Yeah, like this. The hardest thing is if they get a look at the monitor, like when we have kids on the show, they look at the monitor and they won't look at the puppet because they just want to see themselves on camera. So.
What is the craziest thing you could say has happened in an NFT audience here while we're performing?
So many crazy things
have happened. NFT audience. I'll emphasize that again, because I'm sure you had some non-PG.
Well, I think one time, I can't remember who it was, that was really excited, went to grab Abby's wand and pulled her arm off. That was painful. She was like, oh no, this is treacherous! But that's, sorry, PG. That wasn't very PG. But I'm trying to think. I can't think of it. It's almost like when you're in this whimsical world, everything seems that way. I'm
right.
trying. I don't know. Come back to me.
Okay.
And I'll blurt
so
something out.
So we talk something and you just blurt it out.
I'll blurt out. This is crazy. I did have a celebrity swear jar for someone. I was like, you have to put a number, you know, we're going to have a dozen cupcakes by the end of the year. But the celebrities are usually on their best behavior. They're very excited and happy and playful. We haven't, maybe we've had one or two that weren't, and maybe they were just nervous, you know, sometimes, I don't know, that was it.
So when you're performing without the puppets, you also do live, right?
Yeah.
How is that a completely different experience that you have no protection? You're on your own. What is that like when you perform?
Well, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I started in education, you know, and did after school programs and in theater, Sweeney Todd, Little Shop, Pump Poison Dynamic. I mean, I've done a ton of theater, so I'm used to that part. I guess what I do is I just out myself right away. I was just like, okay, well, let's just have fun. Anything can happen. I'm weird. Let's have fun. You know? So, but usually my shows are like, sometimes it's me, sometimes it's Lolly. So, but I really like, I don't know, I kind of hope that when people come to my shows, they know they're going to laugh. So I think that's what I think about. I think that my main purpose is to spread joy. And then I lock in on that intention, and that helps me a little bit.
Okay. So let's do some technical stuff. Let's say somebody out there right now wants to make a puppet. What advice would you give them? What's the step one?
Step one, open your underwear drawer and grab a sock. No, step one is everybody out there already has a puppet on their hand. In fact, can you hold this for me? Okay, so right now, if everybody were to hold your hand up right now, in fact, you have two puppets. You probably have four. In fact, right now, look at my knees.
Hey, what's going on?
Okay, don't look at that. But step one is just the basic movement of coming up with a character. I always think that's it.
So what do I sound like? How you doing? Hey, Kelly, did you believe it? Can you believe it? You asked me to do this in December. Remember? It was December. It was so long ago. You know, it's great. I don't even know how to remember because I don't have a brain, ears, or eyes. For that matter, I have nothing. Can you see me? Because I can't see a darn thing. Oh, wait, I do see you. You're very dressed up. So I think that's the main thing is thinking, and the character isn't just the voice. It's what he wants to say. Is your character shy? Is your character a know-it-all? According to my calendar, December is not that far along, and you should remember, didn't you check in with Kelly?
Incessantly, I kept on checking in. So I think about you know, and if you want to make a puppet, anything can be a puppet, right? I wish I had more things here, but this could be a puppet. A lot of times, during COVID, I did a lot of weird Wednesdays, and I would go to, you know how greeting cards had, I don't know, a duck with sunglasses?
Yeah.
Or a
bunny, or
a bunny, yeah. Or a, like two senior citizens in a sports car.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, as they do. And I would like cut out the pictures, and I would just hold them up into frame. And like Monty Python was my brain back in the day. It was one of my sources of comedy, and I would just grab them. Woohoo! Let's go! Will you slow down? You know, and I would just start by my voice and then give a voice to something that I see on inanimate objects, and I would just hold it in frame and make it talk. Also, if you're doing a puppet on a video screen, the basic would be getting used to holding your puppet close to the camera, bringing it back. You know, if it's your hand, you look to the corners, looking up, and realizing where your puppet is in space, you know, and how to make it walk, make sure it doesn't slide in, jump in. So just using your own arm for those few little basic things, then you start thinking how your puppet moves. Is it excited? Is it nervous? Is it sad? So a lot of physical comedy goes into that, too.
What about the acting side?
Okay, well, the acting side. Also, if you do want to get into puppetry, find a local puppetry guild. You know, that when I got the Muppets, I was terrified because I made everything by hand, right? So I joined a puppetry guild, and I met Frank Oz's dad. Frank Oz is the original Miss Piggy. Hello, Fozzie Bear. Bert, I'm like, can we give it up for Frank Oz? And his dad was a puppeteer who came over and brought his puppets to escape the Holocaust, right?
Yeah.
And he's sitting there telling me stories about showing me different puppets. I was blown away. So here's the terms of acting. It's all about storytelling. You're all actors already. Right? So if you are telling a story about your mom, like my mom, I am just so positive. You know, my mom is so positive. She runs around. Like, so a lot of it is just like, tell stories about the people in your life and dare to try to imitate them. Right? So start with something that you really know. A lot of people will pick up a script and try to write it. Write your own script. Write a story and tell it from a place of truth, authenticity. You know, when I used to teach theater to kids, just getting them their minds used to memory, I used to use Where the Sidewalk Ends, Shel Silverstein.
Okay.
And they had all these, you know, fun. Kelly, there's so many books in the library that have great characters and they have the visuals. So it's just, but I always say acting comes from really good storytellers, you know, and improvising. And if somebody asks you a question about your mom, you're improvising. You're the only one. My mom, like, eats ice cream for three meals a day. She is why I love candy, you know? You can improvise in your own stories and just get the confidence of what that means. And then watch the reaction of people. And I think that's a two-way confidence. Does that make sense?
It does.
And that is part one of the interview. Stay tuned for future episodes of our show where we will provide the rest of the interview. And with that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From The Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
Now, back to our show.
You are listening to It Came From The Radio. I'm here with Deborah Markowitz. She's a writer, director, former film commissioner, novelist, grandmother, But she's a bunch of things, and she's here right now. So welcome.
Jennifer, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So we got lots of questions. You're very experienced. You've done a lot of directing, a lot of writing. So let's get right into the nitty-gritty. Hopefully someone can learn something from you today. As a director, what are some things that you think you must do or don't before you're directing someone else's script?
For me, obviously you have to read the script. I have to like the person. I have to like the script. Even if has to be polished up a bit. I have to know that, first of all, safety is a concern. Are they going to be able to afford to have stunt people? If you need stunt people, do they have their permits? Because you never want to get in trouble with that. You want to make, I think, first of all, is safety. The second of all is the fact that I have to really like the people and make sure it's something I'm comfortable doing. If the story doesn't touch me in some way, then I'm going to recommend them to somebody else, because I pretty much do everything by feeling. Do right. I feel the script when I write? Do I feel it when I write it? If I don't feel it when I personally write it, it's not any good, because that's how I connect with my audiences. Mm-hmm. I know if I'm writing something and if I cry or if it gets me upset, or then I know that it's going to resonate with some people. So if I'm directing for somebody else, I have to make sure that I get those same feelings.
Yeah, that makes sense. I definitely had some tears in my eyes and felt something while we were working on Brimstone, which I think you changed the name.
From the Embers now.
Okay, that's what it is. Okay, I was like, I knew something changed there. But yeah, I think some people are going to have some teary-eyed in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. There's definitely a story there. Actually, why don't you just tell us a little bit about that?
It started originally as a short film called Brimstone, which to showcase my husband, John Marine, who was a phenomenal actor, and Travis Grant, who had wanted to work with John. And I've worked with Travis before. He was the lead in my film Waitlist, The Lovish Story. And I really wanted to see what he could do as an actor. I knew he did comedian. I knew he did romantic comedies. I really wanted to stretch his tool set and see what he could do. So I wrote Brimstone for that reason. It's the story of a very damaged young man who was abused as a child, becomes a drug addict as a result of it. He's cleaned himself up, but he hasn't done the work in order to really have a good life. He's gotten married, but he's disconnected from his wife. He's, you know, he goes through PTSD, so he has issues with his son. So that was the short Brimstone. Then after we did that, and I really wanted to know how the young couple came together. And that's Travis Grant, and Julia Weiner plays the college student who he ends up marrying. From that, it's funny because I started writing it. First day, I'm like, nah, I don't know if I have anything. Second day, I still don't know if I have anything. Mm-hmm. It took about 4 or 5 days of writing for me to go, I have a story. I wrote the feature, and it's, of course, it has to be a feeling story. You want it to resonate with people. But I also wanted it to be a tool for healing. Like, I interviewed a lot of former addicts, people who I've worked with for decades, didn't know they used to have a heroin problem. You know, I did a lot of research, a lot on AA, on NA, on trauma. And then I wrote a story of this very idealistic college student played by Julia Weiner. Her name's Daphne in the movie. And she's interviewing people for her paper. She's way above her grade. One of the subjects she interviews is Travis, who at one point... he keeps pushing her away because he's about 10 years older than her. And he's, as much as he's not really a very good person with women, he realizes she's young and he doesn't want to mess with her. After she goes through a rough time, they end up really connecting and they do end up together. You think that when you have issues, that once you find the person, your life is going to be great. But really, that's when the issues come out. You're safe enough to let them come out. So it's the whole kind of the dance of emotions that these two go through, because she's brilliant, but she doesn't want to know she's got into a codependent relationship. And then when she realizes it, she has to figure what to do about it, because she really does love him, but she's got to figure that out. So there's a lot of amazing moments in it. We just watched the second pass, and it is, they got all the nuances, you know, from this guy who's this big, tough guy that, you know, he just has one night stands everywhere. She touches him in a way that he's not used to. It's just with kindness. And because there's nothing going on with them at the time, he can actually trust her more. And so because of that, she gets closer with him. But I think that is really going to touch a lot of people. And the script itself I think I only submitted it to two or three places, but it won Best Feature, the script, at every one of them. I'm really impressed. I'm impressed because I just didn't know that that was going to happen. So
yeah,
I feel
like someone who worked on it definitely makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So I really feel that hopefully it's going to be something really special. I think it will be.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people who have had troubles with addiction, even pregnancy and an unsupportive husband or a husband who's gone. For me, I've never wanted to have children, and it's my 20,000th confirmation. No, I don't want to end up like this couple. It's mm-hmm. terrifying to me. It's absolutely terrifying. But, you know, people do it all the time, and I've just bowed out of a lot of challenges that people take on in this life. Like marriage and children will probably never happen. But I have other struggles. So don't worry about it. All right. So speaking of struggles, now as a director, you have to really know how to do a lot of different things, from, you know, shutting the water off maybe to shoot a scene, or disabling the fire alarms, also knowing how to deal with multiple personalities with different actors, and knowing how to direct a sex scene and how far you can push it. You know, one actor or actress practically shoot porn, they don't care. And then other actors, you know, they don't even, a kiss on the cheek is you better get consent 10 times in writing. So what's maybe a challenge or two that you've dealt with as a director, and how did you overcome it?
And up until I think this past September, we literally had worked almost 14 straight months on two features, like five different shorts, a pilot, our own projects and projects people had hired us for. And it seemed that one right after the other had a new challenge that I'd never worked on before. One, I had to direct an actress who had Down syndrome, and I had to learn how to work with her. First, we had a couple of meetings by Zoom, and then I met her the day before at the location, and she immediately started to cry. So we had a conversation, and she said, well, when I first do something, I cry. Whenever I do something new, then the second time I start to understand it. And then by the third time, I get it. When we started filming, she immediately started crying. And I said, Ava, what do you do the first time you do something? And you could see the realization coming over her. And she said, I cry. I said, right. And what do you do the second time? I start to get it. And then by the time we had that conversation, she was great. And I also knew that when she got really stressed or tired, have sugar ready for her. Because that's what she loves. So I made sure that there was always snacks on the side. That's like, you know, she had that available. She would get very tired because this was a hard thing for her to do. We left plenty of hours. And so I explained to her that I did Reiki because I'm also a Reiki master. And so I explained what it was. I said, can I do that? And she goes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And once I did it, she was like, all right, I'm ready. And then whenever she would get tired, she goes, magic hands. And then I would comb her, and we got through the day, and the producer afterwards had said to me, I don't think anybody else could have gotten through that. Thank you. You know, but it was not acting with her. There was a shoot after that where I had to direct a child that had just turned 4. And I didn't know how that was going to go, but it was more professional than most of the adults I've worked with. We knew that we were filming outside. It was cool out. The beach was rockier than we knew it was going to be. And she was supposed to dance barefoot across the waterline. And so I told the producer on that one, I said, can get her a pair of pink Crocs just in case we don't want to get hurt or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I'm talking to her, and I said, you know what? We have some pink Crocs for you. It'll match your dress. She goes, the script said I'm supposed to be barefoot, so I will do this barefoot. I went, okay.
And she was fine?
She was great. And then John, my husband, John Marine, was the AD on that project. And so he's giving her directions in very technical terms. He's telling her, okay, back to one. When you get over here, you have to twirl. When you get over here, you have to do that. She did everything perfectly. She was not out of step. She was a phenomenal actress. I just couldn't believe it. This kid is just such a natural. So the first time I dealt with that, on the same film, we were getting ready to film, and we were supposed to have a very realistic-looking baby doll. And we're having our last Zoom meeting before we film, and then the writer and producer said, oh, by the way, I found a real baby. And all of us were like, what? It's like, you kind of have to tell us this. This is like an infant. So immediately have to sit down and figure out the different ways we could film this. If a child came and was cranky, we'd have to move this up. And if a child came, so we had to have alternate sets of filming instructions depending on how great the kid was. And the baby was great, you know. Wow. Slept when she had a sleep and screamed when she had a scream. And I mean, it really worked out well, but it was just all of these things. And then it was the fire alarms in the house where the person who owned this mansion said, yeah, I only have one on the first floor. Yeah, John was an AD on that one. And he went, there's no way they only have one. And we found out during the day there was more than one because the fire department came, you know.
Yeah.
So John had to go speak to them and explain, and we managed to bag all the fire alarms so that, you know, it wasn't smoke, but the mist from the mm-hmm. mist wouldn't set it off. And so we were able to do that. So, yeah, there's challenges on every film set. What makes it doable is having a great crew. Right now we have a very, very solid crew, which I'm very happy with. So we work together so well that it's very rare we don't finish early. Because we all know each other and we know how we work. They're very professional. You know, every now and then you work with a new actor, but I also work with a lot of the same actors. And so we know each other. We know how it works. They don't take advantage. They're not prima donnas. I've worked with a lot of names as well. I haven't had a problem on my set. I also do casting. And there was one big name actor I got for one set. I've worked with her before without a problem. I was there for half the day, and I knew it was going to be an overnight shoot, but I left because I was just the casting director. So I go home. I know it's overnight. I go to sleep, and I get a text from the director. I look at my phone at like 5 a.m, and there's a text from the director going, your husband is a man among men. And I'm like, oh, God, what happened? And then I have this like 3-page letter from the actress about it was just such a terrible shoot. It was awful.
Oh, no.
And the things she was complaining about were things she kind of didn't have a right to complain about, because if we're going to you all day going, what can we do for you? What would you like? Mm-hmm. Can we go get you something to eat? And then you'd say no, and then you don't like the food. All you had to do was say, hey, go get me a steak. We would have gotten her a steak. She was very volatile. I don't feel comfortable working with her again. She was supposed to be in one of my projects, but I recast her. And it's a shame because, well, you know what? I mean, I won't say her name, but she's an A-list actress. And she basically destroyed her own career because of behavior like this.
Yikes.
You have that. But luckily, almost all the actors I've worked with have been amazing. And the only other one, and it wasn't a big problem at all, somebody had shared photos from set. And he was talking to this gorgeous young woman. He wasn't being crude in any way. But when he saw the picture come up, because I really don't like that. I'm like, okay. And I honestly should have cleared it with him. But I didn't put the picture up. So I made the person take it down. But, you know, people see things and they read things into it. But really, he was cool. He just said, I really don't like this. Okay, let's take that down. Next time I'll get your approval, you know, which we should. They have managers, you know, some of them are big names. But otherwise, people have been really lovely. I haven't had a problem with actors.
Well, speaking of that, Lisa, next question. So I was like simply reciting my schedule to an actress, and she's like, what are you doing? Whatever. So I'm going to do this and this, and I'm doing this for Deborah Markowitz. And she goes, oh, Deborah Markowitz, I've been writing to her for 10 years to work with her. I've been dying to work with her. I'm not going to say who it is. What do you look for when it comes to working with an actress? Because you clearly didn't want to work with this person, or you didn't get her emails. I don't know. And either way, I'm not going back to this one.
I used to, I run the Long Island International Film Expo, which is going on 29 years this July. And
that's awesome.
What I used to do, I haven't watched films now in at least 5 years, probably longer, because I don't have time. But when I would watch these movies, if an actor caught my eye, I would put them on my wish list. And then I would go, when I do a project, who's that actor I really liked? And I'll look at that and I'll call them because I know they can act. I've seen them. I will oftentimes call the director of that project and go, how are they on set? Are they going to be a problem? Are they going to be? Because that matters. Yeah. You know, you
definitely.
Won't be. So it used to be from seeing those movies. Now I don't watch those films anymore, but I go to a lot of film festivals with my movies. And I'll often see actors and I'll go, John, make note of them, you know, or I'll write something down. I don't always have time to look at reels people send me. However, when we were doing From the Embers, one actress sent me her reel. And I said, well, she has a look. I'm looking to cast Professor Morrison for From the Embers. Let me look at her stuff. And I'm like, oh, God, that's her. I had three other people read, but I'm like, that's her, you know, but I had her read it and we ended up hiring her and she was amazing. And the only other time that really worked for me, there is somebody who runs a women's film festival. I can't remember the name, but I like her a lot. And she had said to me at one point, hey, can you take a look at my son's reel? Just look at it. I'm not asking you for any guarantees or promises. I said, sure. So I looked at this guy's reel and it's really good. I think the next day I get a call from another director I have worked with, and he said, hey, I have to cast this multi-ethnic pilot for somebody, and I need, this person has to be Hispanic, this person has to be African-American, this has to be whatever, and this is the lead. And I'm like, oh my God, I just saw this guy yesterday, he's perfect. And so I sent him to that director, and the director said, where did you find this guy? I'm like, his mother just sent me his reel, and he's amazing. And so that worked out. But as far as actors, they got to be great. You know, it's one thing if you have one line, almost everybody can pull off a line. And I'm not going to say everybody, because some people just can't.
Yeah, but, some people just can't.
Yeah, they just can't. You know, I'd love to see a reel if they have a reel. When I hired Julia Weiner, I hired her first for Waitlist. I needed a very, very pretty young blonde to play.
I loved her character. Yes, I told her after the film that she was one of my favorite characters in Waitlist.
She didn't have a reel, but what she had was some monologue she taped. And I'm like, she can do this. There's only a few lines. I think she's actually got some good creds here. We used her for that. And then when we were doing the short Brimstone, I said, you know what? Let's use Julia for that. You know, even though she's quite a bit younger than Travis, I said, there's a story there. We can make this work. And she was very good for that. And then when we decided to make it the feature from The Embers, I sent her the script. They said, now read this carefully. There's a lot of intimate scenes in here. There's no nudity. You know, there's not really any simulated sex, but there's kissing and holding. And I don't care if you're wearing a 3-piece suit underneath, you know, underneath the sheets, but from here, whatever, it's got to look like, you know, your neck on down, it's got to look like you're not wearing anything. Make sure you're comfortable. And she said, I want to do it. And I honestly thought she was hesitant. You know, we almost seemed to have a little bit of a disconnect for like a short while, but I asked her out for coffee and we talked it out and it's like, okay. And she wanted an intimacy coordinator, which I'd never worked with before. Usually I sit down with my actors. Since I work with a lot of the same people, you know, they'll be like, some of them will go, how naked do you need me to be?
And right, exactly.
I really don't want nudity in my movies. I just don't. I don't want anybody to look back on it and feel bad ever.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. And I think the suggestion of is sexier than actually having to see that. You know, but by the time we had the intimacy coordinator come one day, and at the end of it, Julia's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. You know, it was fine. I don't blame her because there's a lot of not nice people out there.
And you never know.
My actors know me. They trust me. But there's a lot of not cool people out there. So she's smart to look out for herself.
Oh, definitely. Oh, I had a director who wanted me to basically get naked. And there was at least 2 or 3 people on set. I didn't have to say anything. It was almost like God or something took over. And they said, I got to the scene. They said, you could just have the nightgown, just show it thrown on the bed. You don't have to actually show her.
Exactly.
Thank God. I didn't have to say anything. I thought I was going to have to walk off set. But anyway, no, Julia was fantastic.
Yeah.
I honestly can't imagine anyone else playing the role. She looked beautiful. Her acting was phenomenal. She sold the story. Yeah. I believed every single thing she did, you know, if I saw it or if I was back with you listening to the audio. Mm-hmm. So we're at the very end of the interview. I got a few more questions for you, but we didn't even get to them. So if you could just give our audience anything that's on your mind. We got like a minute and a half, just any of your final thoughts, anything you want to share, and then also where to find you, your social media, your website.
Okay, well, they can look at my terribly out-of-date website, which I have to update in the next week, but it's called IntentionFilmsAndMedia.com, IntentionFilmsAndMedia.com, or they can follow me on Instagram at Deborah Markowitz Film, DeBraMarkowitz Film. That's where I post about most of my projects. They can look on the website and look at all my films and see trailers and whatnot. Yeah, we sold Waitlist now, and we're sending the deliverables to the company who's going to send it out there and sell it for us. So I'm pretty excited about that. We signed with Indie Rights. Brimstone, we're in our second pass, and I'm so happy with how that's coming out from The Embers. And then we have to film the second half of A Couple of Guys, which is an LGBTQ feature with a lot of television. Mm. So we just nailed down the dates for that. So I'm excited. But just, you know, check out our stuff. And you know what? If you want to meet a director, if you want to meet me, go to a film festival where I am. You know, go watch the film. Come talk to me. You know, I'm more easily approachable. And then I will tell people, send me a reel. I'll hand out a card, which, yeah, I still have cards. Send me a reel. Let me look at your stuff. And
also the Long Island Film. Tell us about your film festival. What are the dates for that?
Yeah, it's going to be July 8th to the 12th this year at the historic Belmore Movies. Awesome. It's our 29th year. We're still open for submissions. If you go on Film Freeway, it's Long Island Film Expo. That's also the Instagram name. And enter now. It's very competitive, but, you know, we give you a great experience. There's lots of networking, panels. Mm-hmm. Been around longer than pretty much any other film festival out here other than the Hamptons. We keep trying to find people to get involved with that because eventually I just kind of make movies full time. You know, I mean, I am making movies full time anyway, but I've done my time.
Okay. So maybe anyone could help out with the film festival. I'm going to co-sign. I'm a big fan of the film festival. I've gone for several years just supporting films. I think I have one film. You'll see it. You'll see my face if you watch the film. It has been submitted that I star in. It's a really scary, disturbing film. Watching it is a painful experience, and also filming it was a painful and disturbing experience.
Wow.
So have fun watching that submission. The director submitted that. Also, Waitlist, really enjoyable film. So hopefully you guys will get a chance to watch that. It's a relationship film. Beck Fortis is in it. Travis Grant is in it. The acting is great. It's just a fun, I guess, kind of a lifetime relationshipy type of movie.
A young man who's always been in love with his childhood friend's mother. And as he gets older and you find out she's gotten divorced, he decides he's going to go for it. So it's a cute, sexy, fun film.
It was fun. It was fun. Julia Wonder's in that. She's adorable. Maybe one of my favorite characters in that. But yeah, check out Deborah Marquez. She's done so much stuff. I can't sum it up in a 20-minute interview. We've gone over time. But definitely check out the film festival. Definitely check out Waitlist from the Embers. I haven't seen the final cut, but it's going to be great. And a couple of guys, well, it's not done yet. So stay tuned for that as well. And stay tuned for a ton of other stuff. I think you're going to see probably over at least 60 titles. You know, or maybe 100 titles coming from Deborah Markowitz, or maybe even 1,000, you know, during her lifetime. I don't, you never know. You're a very productive person, and respect for that. So, yeah, a lot more to say, but this is a very effective, efficient woman with lots of interesting thoughts. And I guess we'll continue this maybe in another interview, but definitely check out her work and check out the film festival if you're on Long Island. If you're not going, something's wrong with you. On that note, back to the studio for more with Mark Torres.
If you had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on the Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of the show,
tough,
go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From the Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.